Good afternoon, everybody. This is Barb Pello. I'm a group director at InfoTrends, and I'm delighted to be moderating your webinar today titled Profitably Producing Books of One, sponsored by Canon Solutions America. You know, not too long ago, it was extremely costly and difficult to publish or produce short-run books. Typically, you needed to produce numerous copies to reduce the cost per item, and a lot of times, publishers and authors would end up with hundreds or even thousands of books that never sold. Now, digital print and streamlined manufacturing software solutions have greatly changed this process, and publishers can actually print a book of one or short runs very affordably. Today, I am delighted to be joined by two speakers that are going to share with us perspectives on the market. The first is Flory Binford Kichler, and she's the executive director of the Independent Book Publishers Association. And the second is Jeremy Hess, and Jeremy is the director of sales and marketing for Gash Printing. And what you're going to hear today are some of the most critical requirements of independent publishers, and then how companies like Gash can help address those requirements. But before we get started, what I would like to do is share some tips for enjoying the webinar. First of all, if you are having technical difficulties, you can let us know by using the Q&A box, or you can troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget below. Now, if you've got a question for any of our speakers today, and we'll be taking your questions throughout the webinar, just submit via the Q&A box. Make sure that you disable pop-up blockers, and if you want to see what the console can do, you can click on the Tips for Attendees widget for a complete rundown. Now, what we'll be covering today. I'm going to spend just a few minutes talking about critical trends that are transforming the publishing market. And then you're going to get great market perspectives. And what you'll hear from is first Flory about being a successful independent book publisher, and then from Jeremy about how service providers are gearing up to meet those needs. We'll wrap with a few recommendations and conclusions, and then respond to any questions that we didn't get to during the course of the webinar. Now, let me start by talking just a little bit about what's going on in the industry. First of all, I think what you're seeing is that technology has changed how content's created, formatted, designed, stored, printed, digitized, distributed, and sold. And as a result, what we're seeing is new content products are being created, new channels are emerging, and revenues are shifting among a whole array of different distribution formats. Now, what we're seeing is that these changes have touched virtually all participants in the publishing industry, whether it's the author, the publisher, the print service provider or manufacturer, wholesalers, retailers, e-tailers, and the consumer. One of the groups that actually tracks what's going on in the marketplace is Bowker and his Book Stats. And basically what he does is on an annualized basis publishes what's going on in the industry. And so some highlights from the most recent Book Stats indicate that, first of all, the U.S. market for books, and you can see it here, dropped from $27.9 billion to $27.2 billion between 2010 and 2011, or it declined about 2.5%. Interestingly, e-books more than doubled in net sales in the trade market and generated $2.1 billion and just offset the decline in print formats, including hardcover, softcover, and mass market. And what you saw was that overall, the trade book market or book market finished at nearly $14 billion in net revenue and essentially flat from the 2010 net sales number of $13.9 billion. Now, a lot of this is fueled by e-books performance in the adult fiction segment. For the first time, we're ranked number one in net revenue among all individual print and electronic formats. And so we're seeing a lot of dynamics take place in that book market space. Interestingly enough, one of the other things that we saw was substantial growth for small and independent publishers. During the past 4 years, from 2008 to 2011, publishers with annual net sales between $500,000 and $5 million grew unit sales by more than 25%, and that was double the overall industry growth rate. And publishers with less than $500,000 in annual net sales also exceeded the industry average, growing unit sales by nearly 23% in that same span. Revenue was up in the small publisher segment as well. In fact, publishers netting $500,000 to $5 million annually grew at five times the industry average at a rate of over 15%, while publishers netting less than $500,000 grew at four times the industry average, or 13%. Now, what you're seeing is that a lot of this has been enabled by emerging new technologies in the marketplace. And so what we've got is a significant transformation taking place. To meet the demand for content in a range of new formats, including online, web, and mobile devices. And you're seeing all those traditional supply chains being shaken up as the lines between the content provider, the publisher, retailer, and consumer become blurred. And so your challenge as a book publisher is to develop new business models, and you've got to re-engineer those processes and workflow for digital business while supporting, by the way, your traditional print business. When we look at the market, we see trends at a glance. The first thing is that you're seeing an increased number of titles. And what that means is that as those number of titles go up, the runs wind up becoming shorter and shorter. And in fact, the number of print and ebook self-published annually was up by 287% since 2006, and totals over 235,000 titles. The other component is that we're seeing shorter life cycles for knowledge. When you think about it, the volume of information that we as consumers have access to is going up exponentially. And what that means is that book life cycle has been shortened. Clearly, you're seeing the emergence of tons of ebooks out there, as well as the fact that I still have a requirement for that printed static book content. The result of all this is you've got decreasing run lengths. That correlates, by the way, to revenue and cost pressure. You've got to be able to exploit the fragmentation of book markets, and that means I've got to optimize my processes. And all of that results in short runs and on-demand needs. And so when we talk to publishers on a regular basis, what we're finding is there are a series of things that they're looking for. First of all, they want those pre-production copies, to review copies and comps and sales samples. The second piece, they're looking for risk reduction. For them, especially with the multiple format capability in today's market, demand is hard to forecast. And so what we're seeing is they want to leverage digital print technologies, in both inkjet and electrophotographic, to enable economic production of books in very small quantities. Clearly what they're dealing with is you know, cycle time for on-demand, and what they want to be able to do is get books out to the market quickly while the content is hot. And what that means is I want to be able to get it out rapidly, leveraging, in a lot of instances, digital technology. We're seeing shorter runs, and we see a demand to bring back reprints and backlists and out-of-print editions. We're seeing specialty books and fresh content. You know, I tell everybody, we all have a story to tell. And what that means is that we want access to the technology that's going to let us tell it. In some instances, it's a very niche type book targeted to a specific market. In other instances, I might want to produce a custom children's book. And beyond that, it's about bottom line results and profitability. Now, one of the big things and one of the biggest areas we're seeing growth in is the volume of books and pages that are produced digitally for books. And in fact, we track page volume by application at InfoTrends. And what we're seeing is between 2011 and 2016, there'll be a 52 billion page increase in the book pages that are printed digitally. Largely driven, by the way, with the desire to move from traditional print technologies to digital technologies, given all of the book market dynamics. What that means is that the actual pages produced on digital devices will grow at a 14% compound annual growth rate. And so what we're experiencing as if we look at it from a book publisher perspective, is a whole new world and I think new opportunity for the publisher. First of all, books on demand are going to become very affordable as new print technologies emerge. And secondly, what you'll see and you'll hear more about later is that service providers out there are going to offer the ability to seamlessly move between the print and the digital world. Now, what I'm delighted to do is turn it over to Florey, and Florey's going to talk to you about what we're seeing in a market that really is very demanding of these technologies, and that's the independent publisher. Take it away, Florey.
Thanks so much, Barb. It's a pleasure to be here, and hello to everyone in the audience today. I'm going to be talking about trends in the industry that I've observed as both an independent publisher myself and as executive director of IBPA. Then I'll move on to some of the tools and services available to support independent publishers and end by giving you a tip or two on how to meet the future. I'd like to first give you a brief background on IBPA so you'll kind of know where I'm coming from, and I'm going to start by defining a term. If you've published your own book or published someone else's book and are not part of a huge corporation, then you're an independent publisher. The Oxford English Dictionary defines independent as free from outside control, not depending on another's authority, and capable of thinking or acting for oneself. That's what all independent publishers have in common. We're not part of a large conglomerate or multinational corporation. We run our own show. But we're all very different as well. An independent publisher can be a self-publisher, an author publisher, a do-it-yourself publisher, or a traditional publisher. An independent publisher can be brand new or in business for decades. An independent publisher can have one title or 1,000 titles. In 1983, 15 small and independent publishers realized that banding together to help each other market their titles was much more cost-effective than trying to go it alone, and they founded the Publishers Marketing Association, which is now IBPA. Fast forward 30 years and 2,800 members later, and IBPA's mission remains the same: to help small independent publishers sell more books without breaking the bank. Well, how do we do that? Well, through a network of more than 50 cooperative marketing programs and ongoing education on how to publish professionally, IBPA helps open doors that have been traditionally closed to smaller publishers. If members need advice, the IBPA staff is always available to take questions and find answers. And IBPA offers a host of discounts on goods and services that save members tons of money. One publisher speaking out will not be heard, but IBPA, as the voice of 2,800 publishers, has a wide sphere of influence that gives smaller publishers clout on industry issues that impact you directly. IBPA is the smaller publisher's advocate and champion, no matter how big the challenge. So I'm the executive director of IBPA, but the other hat I wear is the publisher of Patria Press, my publishing company that I began 12 years ago with one book and my own savings, probably like many of you, and couldn't have grown without IBPA's support. And I'm the typical IBPA member. 90% of our 2,800 members are publishers with 1 to 15 titles, publishing in every genre from antiques to true crime. I encourage you all to visit www.ibpa-online.org to learn more. And speaking of learning more, let's get on with today's program. As you've already heard from Barb, there are many more trends in publishing today than the three that I'm going to talk about now. But I chose these three specifically to set the context for our webinar today. Trend one is the rise of self-publishing, which Barb also pointed out in her remarks. Self-publishing is a true legitimate power to be reckoned with, noted Kelly Gallagher, then Vice President of Market Research for Bowker, the U.S. ISBN agency. Self-publishing has moved into the mainstream of our industry over the past 3 years, said Penguin CEO John Mackinson. According to the Bowker Company, which compiles book statistics every year, and I quote, the number of self-published books produced annually in the U.S. has nearly tripled, growing 287% since 2006, and now tallies more than 235,000 print and e-titles. In 2011, small presses, which is a category that's defined as publishers who've produced 10 or fewer books, accounted for 34,000 self-published titles. 21,000 of those were in print. and that just includes smaller presses who handle their own production. Between the large publishing services companies CreateSpace, Smashwords, Author Solutions, and Lulu, the self-published title count topped 184,000 in 2011, again according to Bowker. And since Bowker compiles its statistics from the quantity of ISBN numbers, those numbers are likely higher than reported since they don't include titles that were published without the ISBN. So those are impressive figures, but what does it all mean? Well, what it means is that it's never been easier or less expensive to get your book published. With just a keyboard and a few clicks of the mouse, you can release the book inside you to the world. As Bayat Barbian from Bowker recently commented, self-publishing is out of the dark corners and making its way into the mainstream. Notable success stories include a number of self-published authors landing their titles onto the prestigious New York Times bestseller list for ebook fiction. Whereas 10 years ago, a publisher would have to risk thousands of dollars to publish a book, the cost today to enter the digital arena as a publisher is virtually zero. This has given rise to an unprecedented explosion of content, as all those folks who have a book inside them can now release it to the world for pennies. And there's no sign that it's going to slow down anytime soon. And speaking of content, that brings us to trend two, the growth of the short. The short is staging a massive comeback. Call it a novella, a short story, a short form, whatever you call it. It's giving publishers the opportunity to repurpose and repackage content while at the same time realizing more revenue. Cookbook publishers can sell recipes one at a time. Nonfiction publishers can sell chapters or sections one at a time. Fiction publishers can sell novels by subscription one chapter at a time. The only limit to selling shorts is your imagination. So what do I mean by repurposing content? Well, let's just take an example. What if you had a book entitled Gardening in Urban Spaces with 12 chapters? The paperback edition is $9.99, and the ebook edition sells for $7.99. Each chapter sells for 99 cents, with a potential of about $12 total whenever all chapters are purchased separately. That gives a publisher a total of 14 different sources of revenue, 12 of which are individual chapters from your original book. No wonder shorts are on the rise. The ease of digital publishing combined with the low cost of the short and publishers' recognition of additional revenue potential from content they already own is just too good to pass up. Trend three is innovation. Independent publishers have always led the way with innovative content. Why is that? Because we're lean and mean, and our small size and agility enables us to turn on a dime and get books into the marketplace on any given topic when that topic is still just a gleam in the eye of corporate publishers. Now the indie content juggernaut's rolling even faster with the advent of digital technology. As production methods, both print and electronic, constantly improve in both speed and quality, content is partnering with creation to give independent publishers even more of a leg up when it comes to getting to market fast and in more formats than ever before. So let's talk a little bit about the tools and services that are available to support independent publishers in our never-ending quest to publish the best content written by ourselves or others cost-effectively in as many formats as possible and making the most of the latest technology. Tool number one is education. What do I mean by that exactly? Education is listening, attending as many on and offline seminars about the publishing business as you can. Education is networking, attending trade conferences in person if your budget permits, and if not, at the very least, joining publishing groups on Facebook and LinkedIn and participating in the community. Education is reading. Reading every trade journal you can get your hands on. I've put together a partial list for you here, cleverly entitled Flory's Partial Reading List. I say partial because, needless to say, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There are many, many more. Tool number two is your niche. I'm going to use myself as an example here. My company's mission is to bring an old children's book series back into print, rebranded as the Young Patriot series. Each book features the childhood adventures of a famous person in American history and is written for ages 8 to 12. Period. I don't publish children's picture books for ages 3 to 7. I don't publish young adult novels for ages 12 to 17. I don't publish the childhood adventures of famous people in British or Mexican or African history. Why? Because I'm a small publisher with a small budget, and I have to choose my markets carefully. By focusing on my niche, I can invest my marketing and production dollars wisely where they'll do the most good. And those niches can be as small as, in my case, a museum in my home state of Indiana, or as large as the thousands of elementary schools in the United States. If you follow what I call the 2-inch-wide and 2-mile-deep theory, meaning focusing your marketing and production efforts on a narrow niche and mining it as deeply as you can, you will get far more bang for the buck than trying to find the everybody that you're sure will love your book. Let me give you an example of what I mean. We'll stick with the gardening image that I mentioned earlier. Suppose you've written and published a book on gardening in your backyard. You've sold almost 1,000 to your state libraries, a few local bookstores, and from your website and Facebook pages. You tweet, feed your Pinterest account daily, keep your blog updated, and comment on others' gardening blogs. You've worked your written marketing plan, but sales are starting to slow. And much as you love gardening, you're thinking that you need a change of pace, and your next book might be a young adult novel. But before you desert your first love and jump on the Hunger Games bandwagon, consider the marketing niches yet to be explored, like garden clubs, online gardening book clubs, national gardening associations, national, state, and local real estate associations for whom you can print special personalized covers for your book that members can purchase and give to their clients, greenhouses and nurseries, and the list goes on. Then consider, for your second gardening book, mining your niche even further. How about flower gardening in small containers on rooftops, followed by vegetable gardening in small containers on rooftops, followed by small container gardening on rooftops on a budget? The only limit is your imagination. Not only do you have a specific and targeted market, but that same market's likely to be interested in each book you produce, and you'll soon become an expert at reaching that market. Stick to your niche, target your market, repurpose your content, but don't wear blinders. Do look for ways to continually reinterpret your niches, both vertically by producing apps and ebooks, and horizontally, for example, moving from books about gardening to cooking to house and home.
Sorry, I got a quick question for you.
Sure.
And it links to your business model for young patriots.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, well, you talk about marketing a gardening book. How do you market your Young Patriots series, and what are the typical run lengths for that book?
Oh, okay. I'll take the second question first because that's easier. I usually do, for a new title, I will usually do between 1,000 and 2,000 copies. And then depending on what they sell after that, I will likely switch to short run if I need to, or print more if I need to. In terms of marketing, my niche is pretty unique, but since each one of my books talks about a certain person in American history, there are any number of opportunities to sell that book to historic sites, to the historic home of that person, to museums, to schools who are studying a certain period in history. So when I say that the only limit is your imagination, you know, my niche happens to be American history. Yours may be something different, but there's really no end to who you can sell to if you really put your thinking cap on.
And then one other thing, you mentioned that you print obviously a relatively long initial run and then you reprint in short runs. Do you distribute your book as an ebook?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and how complicated has that been for you in terms of, and what's the uptake on the ebook versus the print edition?
Well, it's interesting because what I'm seeing in terms of production, it's just the same as doing a print book. In other words, production is production. They're different formats, but the basics are still the same. And so as long as you find a good provider, then an ebook is not a big deal to get produced. In terms of what I'm seeing sales-wise is my type of books, I think, have been a little bit slower to catch on into the e-market simply because schools were a little bit behind. But I'm now seeing that catching up, and I'm finding, although I still sell more print books than I do e-books at this point, my e-book sales are climbing.
Great. Thank you.
Sure. I will move on now to tool number three, print on demand. That was a good segue, that question. Before print on demand, which I'm going to shorten to POD, and short run digital printing came on the scene, we would get a typical phone call at the IBPA office that sounded something like this. Good morning, IBPA. How may I help you? I'm a brand new publisher and was wondering if I could ask you a question. Of course, that's what we're here for. What's your question? I have 5,000 books in my garage. What do I do now? I'm not making this up, sadly. We've gotten many calls just like that. The good news is that now those calls are no longer necessary. Because, as I just touched on in my answer to the previous question, print on demand has allowed the publisher to produce and the reader to buy one book at a time, eliminating the need to invest a ton of money in inventory. POD used to be publishing stepchild. The quality was spotty, and in the early days, it was perceived by the industry as a tool exclusive to small publishers. Now that POD has caught up to traditional print in terms of quality, it's entered the mainstream and it's used by large and small publishers alike. So what are some of the advantages of POD and short-run printing? You save money. As I mentioned previously, and I can't say this enough times, but back in the pre-POD short-run days, publishers had to invest a lot of money into printing a lot of books. Now a publisher can invest less than $5 or $10, depending on the size of the book, and print as few as one. No more garages full of unsold books with print-on-demand and short-run printing. You save risk, and what I mean by that is you reduce your risk. If you're not sure how many copies your new title will sell, it makes much more financial sense to start small, print 150 or 100 at a time, until you have an historical sales track record you can use to project future inventory needs. And thirdly, you save content. There's no need to ever declare a title out of print with POD and short-run printing. Even if a book is only selling 100 copies a year, with short-run printing and or POD, you can keep it available forever. Your production partner, tool number four, is one of the most important tools in your publishing arsenal. So what are some of the criteria you consider when choosing a good partner? Well, I've got three for you today. And the first one is, of course, cost. It goes without saying that you always want to get the best price you can when choosing a service provider to print your book or create your ebook. Therefore, I recommend that you request at least three cost quotations from three vendors so you can get a good comparison as to what producing one, or in the case of print, 1,000 or 5,000 books is going to cost you. Make sure when you're requesting your pricing that you give each vendor the exact same specifications so you know you're comparing apples to apples. In the case of print, the same quantities, the same type of paper, and in the case of both print and ebook, the same delivery date that you need. The second criteria to look for in a production partner is quality. When you're considering a printer, take a look at the other books they've printed and make sure that their work delivers the same high standard that you want for your book. You can do the same thing for an ebook producer. Request samples from the vendor you're considering and examine them for appropriate binding, paper, and print quality. Do the exact same thing for ebooks. And finally, then, make sure that the service provider is experienced in producing books similar to yours in the case of print, trim size, paper, and binding, and in the case of ebook format. And finally, the third and what I think is the most important criteria for your production partner is trust. When I talk about trust in a service provider, I'm simply talking about the confidence you have that your printer or your ebook producer will come through for you on time, on budget, and with the quality he or she promised. Trust is difficult to win, but once achieved, it's the most valuable of these criteria in a production partner. In fact, you may find that trust trumps all other considerations, including cost. In other words, if that trust factor is not present, the least expensive service provider is not necessarily going to be your best choice. The lowest cost won't mean a thing if your books are delivered late with pages missing or misprinted. For your fifth and final tool, I give you, of course, your IBPA membership. That will help you make the most of these tools as well as many more. In closing, I'd like to say just a word about a topic that's guaranteed to get any group of book industry professionals buzzing, and that's the future of print. The future ain't what it used to be, that's for sure, said Yogi Berra. And isn't that the truth when it comes to the book business? Here's some numbers for you to think about. Preliminary data from the annual Book Stats study shows that 457 million e-books were sold last year. That's up 4,456% since 2008, when just 10 million e-books were sold. But it's still fewer than the 557 million hardcovers sold last year. So what does that mean? Well, as you might guess, interpretations vary. On the one hand, Michael Peach, CEO of the Hachette Book Group, said that in all the talk about e-books, we often lose track of the fact that more than 3 out of 4 books sold in the U.S. are still printed ones. We still see a steady transition in reading from print to digital, says Amazon Vice President Russ Grandinetti. You put 6 publishers in a room, and odds are 3 will contend the print is dead, while the other 3 will argue the opposite just as vigorously. So what should you do? Well, I'll leave you with this recommendation to position yourself for whatever the future brings. Your final tip for me today is don't stop. Don't stop learning. I talked about the importance of education. It's ongoing, and I know that since you're all here at this webinar today, you already know how critical it is to stay informed about your industry. Don't stop pivoting. In other words, don't be afraid to change direction. As I said earlier, one of the strengths of being an independent publisher is being able to turn on a dime when conditions warrant. Because we're not bogged down with a lot of expensive overhead and infrastructure, we can be nimble as needed, depending on whether it's the external environment that's changing or something within our own companies. And finally, don't stop exploring options when it comes to book production, especially now that technology is enabling creation of all formats, including print, cost-effectively. Why wouldn't you take advantage of providing readers what they want when they want it? Thank you so much for your attention.
Now, you can't leave me yet, Flori, because we got a few questions for you
here. I'm not going anywhere.
You don't go anyplace on me. Couple of quick questions. And the first one is the definition of print on demand. And maybe you and I can share this one. But what's your definition of print on demand? How many books do you look at when you think of doing on-demand printing?
Well, you know, that definition, you're right, is going to vary. In my own mind, I think of print on demand as ordering one book at a time as it is ordered by the customer. Short run digital printing, I look upon as 10, 15, 20, 50, 100, even as many as 500.
Okay.
That's my personal definition. Your mileage may vary.
Okay. Yeah, no, well, and I think that's a pretty good way of looking at it. And I think the big message around this is that with today's technology, depending upon the service providers you use, you can actually do both. Now, let me ask you a little different question. And that is, you mentioned, and I think you did, and I missed it, but somebody in the audience picked this up. And it said, we have a question for Flori. Where does the cost of $5 or $10 for one book come from? What kind of print production partner can provide that type of service? So I'm just going to stop there and ask you because I didn't hear the dollar amount.
Okay, well, no, that's good, and I appreciate that question because it's a little clarification is needed. When I say $5 or $10, I am talking only print cost. I am not, and that's for one book. I'm not talking about all the upfront costs that you invest in editorial and design and that kind of thing. So when I'm talking about it, you can spend $5 or $10 to produce one book at a time. I'm talking just the cost to print it.
Yeah.
Does that help?
Sure.
Okay.
Now, let me ask you, how do you price books, printed books versus ebooks?
That's a good question, because I think every publisher maybe looks at it a little differently, but my ebooks are priced at about two-thirds the cost of print.
Okay.
That's just the formula that works for me.
Okay. Now, this question I don't have an answer to, and you may not either, but that's all right. We just like to make sure that if we've got – if somebody asks the question, what do I need to do to get our bookstore set up to sell ebooks? They're trying to reestablish a relationship with ABA, but beyond that, what other things would a bookstore need to do to sell ebooks? And I really don't know the answer to that, so I thought I'd try you on it.
That is a good question, because I know that ABA has a relationship with Kobo, and I know that they offer that option to all their stores. I'm not a bookstore owner or have nothing to do business-wise and have never had other than going inside one, so I don't really know for sure. But I think probably the best thing you can possibly do is encourage that bookstore to take advantage of that. If they're a member of ABA, take advantage of that relationship with Kobo to get ebooks started in their store.
Okay. And one last quick question, then I'm going to turn it over to Jeremy. But how do you get your ebooks into the marketplace?
There's a lot of different ways to do that, and a lot of it, of course, depends on what your marketing is. But I do a lot of marketing myself, but I also have a master distributor who distributes my books. And most of where the ebooks are going now, most of where they're going is they're going to Amazon, they're going to Barnes & Noble, they're going to Baker & Taylor. And so the fact that they're going to Baker & Taylor, who's a library distributor, tells me that obviously libraries are ordering ebooks as well. But, I mean, marketing is marketing. And I think whether it's print or whether it's e or whether it's both, you still market the same way. And as long as you know that the market that you're targeting is interested in ebooks, and for example, if it's a reseller that they're reselling ebooks, then you just market that the same way as you market your print.
Okay, great. Thank you. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it over to our next presenter, and hopefully Jeremy will add some color to on-demand versus run lengths of one and those types of things. And Jeremy is really in the manufacturing side of it. He's going to share with you their approach to taking those requirements from the independent publisher and breathing life and reality into them when it comes to making the rubber hit the road. So with that, Jeremy, take it away.
Thanks, Barb. I really appreciate it. It's very interesting to hear the discussions on this topic, as it's a very exciting market, and the future of this market is just it's fun to look at, and the growth potential of it is exciting. Gash Printing has been a proud supporter of IBPA and the independent book publishing community as a whole, and it's something we've spent a lot of time investing time and money into, looking at how we can better serve this community. What are the changes that are happening within this community? What is the future going to look like? And how, as a print service provider, can we be of a better service to them? So just as a little bit of a background about me and our company, Gash Printing is a family-owned and operated business. I've been in business for over 30 years, and we are a short- to medium-run digital book printer. That's what we do all day, every day. We invested very heavily in the digital book printing market, and it's resulted in us being ranked amongst America's fastest growing private company the last three consecutive years. So it's an interesting dynamic where you have a family-owned business that is a very intimate in how we deal with our customers and approach business and the personal approach to things. But having said that, it's a company that's growing rapidly and growing every day and looking for different markets that have that growth potential, and the independent book publishing market definitely is one of those that we're looking closely at. To sort of give you a background of the types of customers that we work with, you can really break it down into three categories sort of broad categories, but three categories. You have the publishing companies of, as a whole, all various sizes, large, medium, small, of all different types, genres, et cetera, et cetera. You have associations. We're in the Washington, D.C. area, and there's an association for everything, and so the association market is a market that we, you know, pay close attention to as well. And then third being the independent market, which we're talking about today. And we see that consisting of, you know, anywhere from self-authors who are doing their first book or their fifth book or their tenth book, all the way to independent publishing companies like Flory was talking about, where you have established companies and they might have authors underneath them where they provide publishing services to them. So it's really a wide variety of people, especially in the independent side of things. So my goal is to sort of, like Barb said, is to take it through the perspective of the print service provider, how we see the market changing, how we're adjusting our services and our approach to them accordingly. So to start off with, obviously, like Flory talked about, anyone can do it. That's the beauty of independent book publishing, is that it can be anywhere from a 90-year-old couple that was in my office not long ago who had worked on their book for years and years and years and years trying to get that book out, anywhere, all the way down to a 12 or 13-year-old kid who has done their book and or series of book and trying to get that out there. And again, the beauty of it is you're taking control of your own destiny. You're grabbing the bull by the horn, so to speak, and ultimately your success and failure is up to you. And I think the big part of that is not only the advancements in the printing end of things, which we'll talk about shortly, but also the social networking end of things, the internet end of things. It's easier than ever to get that work out there. It's less riskier than ever to do it. And so more people are obviously taking advantage of it. One of the main things that we see in this market is that oftentimes they need help. For those established people, probably not, but for all those people looking to get in it, they need guiding, they need assisting, they need somebody to hold their hand through some of these processes. And thankfully, there is help available out there, whether it be through your print service provider or whether it be, you know, through other online outlets, there is help available. So that is definitely something that GASH has tried to focus on, is providing other services, being not just a provider, but being a partner. I think that's critical in all of this. And I think Flory touched on that very effectively earlier. There's providers everywhere. If you're looking for somebody to print your book or design your cover or something like that or provide a service, there's thousands upon thousands of resources of people that can do that. But how many of those people are really trying to be a partner with you to assist you through that process? And again, that's something that GASH has really tried to make a focus on, is not just provide a great service at a great price that's a high quality, but be a partner in the various areas to do all that stuff. And that can be anywhere from, you know, cover layout design, book layout design, barcodes, ebook conversion, distribution on a small and a large scale, but really assisting you with that. I think a prime example that we run into very often, especially in the smaller range of the independent publishing community, is, you know, hearing print-ready files or other things that these people, a lot of them don't have the experience with. If you've ever dealt with a quote for book printing or any type of printing, especially digital, it says print-ready files or this price is based on receiving print-ready PDFs. Well, some of these people are new to this. That means absolutely nothing to them. All they know is they've typed it up in Word, and it looks fantastic on their screen, so it should definitely look like that when it's printed. And obviously, anyone within the industry knows that there's a lot more involved to that, a lot more processes that need to take place in order to make that a reality. So GASH really tries to take the approach of, again, being a partner and guiding you through those steps of what makes a print-ready file, why this isn't a print-ready file, helping you through those processes. And again, some of the other, some online vendors that, again, may be huge and provide great services at crazy good prices, they might give you a good article on that stuff and help you with that, but we sort of take the approach of having a personal approach to it and assisting you with it, and we think that's a valuable thing and something, a trend definitely in the independent world that is a needed and added value for that.
Hey, Jeremy, two quick questions before you move to the next slide, or while you're on the next slide. Do you do ebook conversions for clients?
Yep.
And the second thing is, what about fulfillment?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually partner with a large warehouse and distribution company called BrightKey, especially in this area. They work very heavily in the association market, handling anything from warehouse and fulfillment all the way to, you know, call center, member benefits, et cetera, et cetera. But we're actually located inside of one of their warehouses where we can have our association clients or publishing clients have all of their print, warehouse, fulfillment all in one location, so there's zero shipping cost, and that can be applied to any size company. But from a independent side of things, typically that is a smaller scale of things. We provide also warehouse and distribution for those people as well. So yes.
Great. Thank you.
Yep. The next major thing that, and I think, again, Flory touched on this also, but not all books are created equal. That's something we stress to people over and over again, and something we run into over and over again. The technology and the equipment that's used makes a huge, huge difference in the end product that you receive. So really stress to those people, especially those people who are newer in the industry, and oftentimes that falls into the category of the independent community, but trying to get educated on the equipment, the technology, what your print service provider uses. Often if you're local, ask to take a tour of their facility. That's something we do all the time, you know, not only with large customers of ours, but with people that we've never met before. Having them take a tour of the facility, learn about the different equipment and processes involved, and why we do things a certain way, and ultimately why or how that impacts their final book that they receive. I can't tell you how many times I've met with people and they come in my office and they bring a sample of a book they've had printed somewhere else online through another vendor, and they say, you know, they went through all the process and the price is fantastic and it was so easy, and they get the final product and it just does not nearly come close to the expectations that they had and was a good representation of the hard work that they had put into the book. And so if you look at the book, you can tell them, look, this is the reason why. They were probably using this process or this type of equipment, and it resulted in this. And we're using a different type of equipment, why it would result in something differently. So just educating them in that a book is not just a book. Not all books are created equal. While price is very important, there are a lot of factors that goes into that price. So that's a very important step also. In talking about the digital advantage, obviously, and we've touched on a lot of these before also, but the quick turnaround times, I think, is critical. And that can be anywhere from the true POD one-off end of things, or it can even be from the short run or larger short run 500, 1,000 end of things, where you can do quick turnaround times that often isn't available in the offset world. So obviously the digital makes small quantities very affordable, like we've been talking about. It makes it possible to bring those ebook only titles into the printing community. The numbers talking about the number of ebook only titles out there is astonishing. It makes it, you know, very easy to get your work out there to gauge interest, and, you know, so it's great in that realm, but the digital end of things provides you the opportunity of testing out that title in the printed form, gauging various interests in other ends of the market to that the ebook only end of things doesn't open. So you can really only do that for the digital end of things. One thing we stress often, not only for independents, but for large, well-established associations or publishers, is use that advantage for test printing, or not just guessing what you hope you'll use and printing, you know, 2,000 and thinking you can definitely sell that, but let's test that out and only print 500 or so. Gauge the interest until we have a well-established track record to base future purposes on. Is digital the end-all, be-all answer to all printing? No, it's not. There needs to be a hybrid amongst everything, but I think it can be used a lot better than it is right now, not just from the independent side of things, but from the well-established side of things as well. Obviously, the reprinting in the past has always been a horrible four-letter word. You know, it's not four letters, but you never wanted to do it. Now it's oftentimes better to plan on doing it. Plan your runs around reprinting. Only use what you know you need now. Worry about the future later. And then to bridge the gap between the POD and the offset. I think too often, especially in digital, you just automatically associate digital with POD or ultra short run or one-offs. And then you have the POD and then the offset. Well, there's actually a huge gap between those two that I think is underutilized. Gash has made a lot of investments in that area to really take advantage of not only the low end, but the gap between the two. And we do through roll-fed technology. So while, yes, it's still digital and it has the advantages in price and turnaround and structure that digital provides, it gives you the speed oftentimes well over 10 times faster than traditional cut sheet digital. So it gives you the speed and the quality that the offset provides as well as the price structure that the offset provides. So you can do something in between there. Oftentimes, I talk with people and they say, yeah, we have a great POD program and we're doing these things on the short run basis. And then we have our offset end of things that starts at this quantity, but they have really nothing in between there. I think that's missing out on a lot of things and not taking advantage of the digital that digital can provide is anywhere from 200 to 1,000 to 1,500 or something in between the short run, ultra short run and the large offset run. Taking advantage of that.
I have a bunch of questions that link to all that. Let me go through this last slide. The first question everybody had for you was, what is quick turnaround? How do you define quick turnaround? Is it 2 days, 4 days? What would you categorize as quick turnaround from a company like yours?
Well, I guess it depends on how much trouble you want to get me in with my production manager. I mean, anything's possible, I guess. While I would never want somebody to tell me they only have 2 days to turn around a book, it's definitely doable. We try to always plan on, you know, give us a couple weeks and we can make that happen no problem without a hassle. But having said that, we all know that life happens and we have people that come to us all the time that say, you know, we have a book signing this weekend that we need books for. Can you help us? And digital makes that possible, whereas with offset, that would make that extremely difficult. Whether you're talking about one book or whether you're talking about 1,000 books or 800 books, it's still in the feasibility of things.
Now, Jeremy, I've got a couple more questions. You mentioned kind of that gap between, I'm going to pick 200 and 1,500, and you talked about toner-based technology and offset. What's your perspective on inkjet? Is it better than the quality of a book produced on toner-based technology? Could you help us out there?
We've been looking very closely at that. I guess different people would have different perspectives, but from what I've looked at, the quality on the toner-based end of things is still better than the inkjet end of things, especially in certain categories such as full color or something like that. The quality differences is huge. So for certain applications, it can work great on inkjet pen. But for at least from what I've seen, and I'm sure there's people out there that will disagree with me, and that's fine. But from what I've seen, the toner-based, the quality is still better than the inkjet end of things, especially on the larger, faster speed applications.
Okay. I'll give a perspective. We track the market. Just a quick comment. The quality on the inkjet side, as well as the number of different papers that you can use, is growing at an exponential rate as more and more vendors enter the marketplace. And so we're starting to see a lot of migration. And if you think about the slide I presented early on, our view is that the quality and the cost of inkjet will come down so substantially that it'll be very, very competitive with offset. And hence, what we're projecting is that 14% growth in pages, book pages produced on digital technologies. And so just kind of an aside on that in terms of what we see happening in the marketplace. Now, I have one other real quick question for you, and that's somebody kind of asked a question that I deem, Jeremy, on the life cycle of the book. And it says, the question came in and it says, well, I understand that print-on-demand allows you to produce books in very small quantities. Is it still more expensive to order a small quantity as opposed to a large quantity of a book? And, you know, Jeremy, I know you've got a perspective on this because the book has a life cycle and inventory and waste. So could you kind of share your views on that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it all varies based on the book and what you view as being a large quantity and what you view as being a low quantity. I mean, obviously, logically, logic tells you that anytime you print more, you're going to get a lower unit cost. But what is the actual unit cost of that? Not just the printing, but the warehousing of the potential life cycle ending, having to waste that. So there's a lot more that's involved in the unit cost than just the printing end of things.
Okay. Terrific.
Yeah, so obviously there is a difference. It's not as big of a difference as a lot of people think because the short run can be very, very cost effective, especially when taking into account those other factors for the whole unit cost.
And I will tell you, and again, we've tracked the market pretty carefully at InfoTrends. We do it all the time. And you're going to see that cost of producing shorter and shorter runs come down even more as inkjet technology really takes hold in the marketplace.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm going to wrap up with just a couple recommendations and conclusions, and I'll keep monitoring the Q&A. But I think the message is a simple one, which is we've got an evolving definition of a book. And it's gone from, you know, physical and static to electronic and on-demand and connected and interactive. And so we're seeing technology impact every facet of the book. And the big message, I think, if you're a publisher today, and I think Flory and Jeremy did a great job at articulating it, is that technology is really going to help all of you drive profit. It's going to manage an array of issues and systems needed for content management and distribution. It's going to eliminate physical inventory and warehouse space. It's going to provide physical logistics and warehouse services because I may not need to store those books, and it's going to integrate with distribution partners that are capable of time-to-market efficiencies as well as global reach. And so, you know, you're at a point where you're going to have to figure out what your strategy is and what role you're going to play as books move into this digital realm and who you want to partner with in terms of a lot of the services associated with the book. And if I'm a book manufacturer, I think if you look ahead, what you'll see is that there's going to continue to be workflow solutions that will help you deal with publishers more effectively. There'll be better technologies, faster speeds, higher quality, more substrates. I think you'll see tools that will do a better job at integrating with the publisher for distribution and allow the integration of electronic and mobile devices as part of the way that you distribute content. And so the bottom line is you've heard a lot about, I think, the requirements in the market, but technology is really going to create a lot of new opportunity. It means I can do new titles. It means I can open new channels. It'll reduce risk. It will encourage new business models, and ultimately it's going to drive profits for you. Now, I'm going to check the Q&A tab. We've got a couple more minutes for questions here. One of the questions, and I'm going to direct this to Flory, is talk a little bit about digital rights management and the implications of a lot of this technology on DRM.
That's a tough one. I'll be the first to say that I am no expert on it, and I think that it just as you're going to hear a lot of people very vocal on whether print is dead or print is not dead. You're also going to hear people equally vocal on do I DRM or do I not DRM. Personally, I am sort of on the side of the I don't DRM simply because I feel that, at least with my titles, I don't feel that I am harmed by having sort of an open source kind of a thing going on. But I know publishers who have especially heavy content like nonfiction or guidebooks, very technical types of books, I can certainly understand that they want to make sure that none of their content gets out there that's not paid for, and I get that. Piracy is an ongoing problem. My personal feeling is, and this is just my opinion, is that it's not going to be solved anytime soon because it's just too hard to ride herd on it and to manage it. So, I mean, I think that's ultimately going to have to be a decision that, each publisher has to make for him or herself.
Great. And so what I'm going to do, folks, is we're at the top of the hour, and I know that everybody has busy schedules. What I would like to do is take just a second to thank Canon Solutions America for sponsoring the webinar. And I'd like to thank you for taking the time to attend, as well as thank our speakers, Flory and Jeremy. Thanks, everybody. Have an absolutely great rest of the day. Bye-bye.